Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Wally Palmer.
And Mike Skill.
And I hear you're in a band. What's that band called?
That's the Romantics, and I play guitar.
And you play?
And I play rhythm guitar, sing, harmonica.
Amazing. You were the guy playing the harmonica up there. You sounded just like that band.
We have a guy that's hired that stands on the side of the stage. He plays while I just mime it, you know. So
you're fitting in with most music today.
Absolutely.
You came from Detroit, and everybody wrote you up back then as a bit, you know, a British invasion band. And then as I was watching you today, I thought, wait a minute, they also tried to corner you as new wave. And then I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking new wave. And back then, Thompson Twins, you know, name any new wave band.
We grew up with, when we were kids, we grew up with AM radio, and singles, 45s came out, and there was 2 minutes and 45 seconds of Rock'em Sock'em rock and roll. FM radio stations, they just kind of got sapped and tapped, you know, sappy and tapped, because the songs were getting longer, and everybody was just, it was just too much liberty and too much freedom. We tried to bring it back to a form that we like the Ramones. They would play 1 minute songs, no guitar solos. We were playing 2-3 minute songs and maybe a few guitar solos, but we weren't trying to be the art rock thing. Was getting kind of stale is what it was.
Yeah, and back then it was very different than today, because in terms of getting quote signed, you know, Bomp Records is like this legendary thing, because when you think about the bands that started on that label, and you ran into them in Toronto, right?
Yeah. Well, we were doing shows. You know what it was? There was this whole underlying movement going on where you mentioned New Wave, or you mentioned Power Pop was another one, you know, and some of this. And yeah, and so, and we happened to put out a single, as well as a lot of other bands did back in, you know, like 78, 1978. And so, and we put it out by ourselves, and Greg Shaw, who was a very big fan, God bless him, no longer with us, but he had Bomp Records, and he was signing, or he would go around the country, or these people would submit songs to him in 45s. He'd hear them, then he'd want these bands to record on his label. And so I think he came out to see us in Toronto is what it was. We played there, and we talked with him, and then we did a 4-song EP for him, and he brought along Bob Segarini, who did the production on that.
Exactly. Well, the thing about it too is, yeah, Bob Segarini recorded our first single, "Tell It to Carrie," wasn't it? First in line. Yeah. But the record labels, the major labels, were missing this whole thing. They totally were missing the boat.
They hadn't caught up yet to where music was. They were still in prog rock then.
They were just missing the whole thing. They didn't get it. The Romantics were never on a major label.
Emperor was not a big label.
It was an independent record label, independent of an independent. Yeah. It was Epic Portrait, right, I think it was. Right, and, so we had to scrap and scrape for any kind of like promotion, any publicity.
It wasn't like there were huge budgets.
Yeah, there wasn't a huge budget, you know. And, you know, it just it made us fight more and made us stronger and for what we were doing.
Rock radio back then was willing to go a little deeper than it is.
They wouldn't play Elvis Costello. They wouldn't play Nick Lowe. They wouldn't play The Jam. They weren't playing The Clash. They weren't playing The Pretenders until later on. They weren't playing anything like that. I mean, it was really...
The Pretenders didn't get played till Brass in Pocket.
No.
What I Like About You was out at the same time. It didn't get as much. It didn't have as much money behind it or what, but...
But see, the thing about it is now we're happy sitting in the chair that we're in because we weren't over-promoted, overly hyped.
3 years in the middle, personnel changes, and then Talking in Your Sleep goes to number three. But that middle time in that second album must have been an interesting time, because you knew that What I Like About You was getting the reaction, I would assume. You did know, right?
What I Like About You was a happy accident. It wasn't something that was thought out calculated. Right. I mean, it went, like you said, it went to 49. It dropped off the charts. Then we hear from our managers that they secured money to put, Budweiser gave them an advance to use the song in commercials. They came over from Holland, right around that area. That song is going on TV, and these guys came over from Holland. We're playing in California at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and these guys go, we want to film you for a video. video was not happening yet in America. It had continued to grow, and it was still happening in England and around Europe from the 60s. They would have videos. So we did this video with them, and the next thing you know, it's played in Europe, it's played in Holland, and then MTV shows up. Then we get popped on to MTV. So it was totally a happy accident. It was never calculated, and the song lives today.
When we were in the studio, we had all these songs that we had been writing from 1970 to tail end of 77 through when we went to go record in 1979. So we had 2 years worth of songs under our belts, and we loved each and every one that we went in to go and record. This particular track was like, you know, the old phrase, lightning in a bottle. It was just there. It hit, and there was some...
And you didn't even know that that was the one.
No, no.
We would have released it ourselves.
That's very true. Or Greg Shaw would have released it on Bump, you know?
I hate to go down the dark road, but, you know, so many bands these days just lose their publishing, right? Because they sign a 360 deal and their publishing goes away. You kind of had a bigger issue for a while there. So what happens during that whole moment where you go, wait a minute, this is not good?
What we had to do is, there came a point after we had recorded 5 albums for an Emperor, which took us into like 1986 or 87, and then there was the other spot there where we found out we parted ties with our management because we just, as a band, we felt things were not right. We need to straighten our house out, you know? Put things in order. And so the first thing to go was our management. When we got rid of management, they kind of pulled the plug on the deal with Nemperor, and which in turn CBS, and then our booking agent also. So everything, we just kind of cleaned house, started over. But we found out that there was money that was funded into the wrong places. It went elsewhere instead of where it should have gone.
I can't imagine.
Which was into our... Yeah, you know, so we went to court and we were in litigation for how long? 5 years at the minimum, I think it was.
But you eventually got your stuff back.
We eventually got back total control of our publishing.
So is the rumor that there's new stuff in the works true?
There's always new music. We have new music. We just pulled in Rich Cole from, he was on the first three records.
Yeah, somebody Facebooked while I was there, said, they had a picture of him and they said, is Rich Cole back in the band? I actually saw it on my Facebook, which was pretty funny.
Right, and well, you know, a lot of stuff Wally was talking about, the way things happen, kind of things happened after the second record. We were touring. We toured on the first album, and then they immediately told us we had to get in for the second record to keep all the hype going. So we got in the studio for the second record, recorded that, and then we're on the road playing the second record. And we lived the first record for like three, four years. And the second record was like brand new, and we're on the road, and things were rough. I mean, like just you're playing the new songs, and things aren't, you know, smoking. And we were at each other, and things weren't working out. I took a hiatus for whatever you want to call it, vacation, and for left the band for a year and a half, came back in, and when I came back in, all these contracts were re-signed, and that's what Wally was referring to, because there were sheets of paper slipped in there in between at a meeting that we didn't realize that we're giving up our copyrights. We were giving up our copyrights and stuff. So anyway, I came back in, and then we get to In Heat. We did In Heat, and that was the biggest record for us, Talking in Your Sleep.
But back then, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no social media. The only way to get a hit was either to be good or pay for it.
It's almost like MTV, because they don't play any music anymore anyways, music videos. You know, it's all games and everything else on there, so it's terrible.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.